For almost 2,000 years, the Catholic Church has pointed the way towards salvation through Jesus Christ. For each of us, that journey starts in darkness, as in a cave. We invite you now to join us as we seek wisdom and truth by way of faith and reason with your guides, Mark Tuttle, Timothy O'Donnell, and Joseph Tomasian. Join us in the Catholic Cave.
Welcome once again to the Catholic Cave. I'm Kent Blanford. In the cave with me, two of your favorite cavemen, Mr. Joseph Tomasian, Mr. Mark Tuttle. Gentlemen, athletes are famous for that great saying, no pain, no gain. Does that apply to life in general, to our existence?
Without suffering, there's no growth?
That's the question.
That is the question.
And suffering's an interesting topic because it's honestly, it's kind of the modern world's dirty little secret. You know, we live in a world where we have technology, we have dishwashers, we have cars, we have
medicine.
We have all sorts of technological development. All of it is designed to make life easier, more efficient, and ultimately the goal is painless, right?
Maximize pleasure, minimize pain.
Right. And you know, the promise of the modern world is that we will all live, you know, lives of luxury where, you know, we don't have to work, we don't have to suffer, we don't have to do anything. We can just live these lives.
That's what the communists would have us believe, anyway.
Right. You know, and it reminds me of the movie WALL-E, if you've ever seen WALL-E. Oh, yeah. And you know, the denizens of the ship that they all leave Earth, because Earth has been destroyed and polluted. The denizens of the ship are they're literally big, fat, happy babies, right?
Yeah, morbidly obese, just floating around.
Right, floating around. No responsibility. I mean, and the modern world sees that as an ideal. But yet, I mean, WALL-E...
They also see the ridiculousness.
Right, exactly. WALL-E says, no, that's a ridiculous... And nobody would be happy living that way. There's a part of our own happiness that depends on us struggling.
Solzhenitsyn's Gulag Archipelago. You know, everybody's provided for, but something is completely off, and it's because there's no suffering, and so we have to find a way to challenge ourselves. You know, that's a first world problem. We live here in the United States in the 21st century, and we basically have everything we need provided for us. We're almost guaranteed 8 decades on the planet. We've got decent health care. We've got good jobs. We are the richest, most powerful country that the world has ever seen. And yet, you know, we come up with these first world problems. There's not enough challenge around us, and so we create these false struggles. That's why we go to the gym or take vacations and go climb mountains, and we create hardships because we recognize such a lack of hardship overall, you know, for, I would say, for the majority of population. Now, you're going to have people at the spectrums, you know, the poorest of the poor here in the United States have daily struggles, and the idea of going to the gym or climbing mountains is ludicrous because they're trying to scrape just to get by.
Right. But I wouldn't pin this problem to a certain extent only on modernity. You know, I think suffering and how we deal with suffering and what place it plays within life, that's a perennial philosophical question.
Yeah. If God is good, why does he allow suffering?
And you know, the modern answer to that, to a certain, not that question, but the modern answer to suffering in general is, you know, suffering is to be avoided. But I'm not sure that differs too much and is a much better answer than previously, where suffering is to be endured. You know, the good old stoicism of, you know, well, suffering is, and, you know, honestly, as Catholic philosophers, as those of us that are sort of imbued with a sense of Catholic theology, the real answer there, and we kind of know it, but I'm not sure we know what it means.
You know, yeah, we hear this,
but suffering is to be embraced.
Yeah,
right. It's not just to be endured. It's not just to be avoided. Certainly not to be avoided, but it's to be embraced. And honestly, I think that's one of those that, even as Catholics, it's hard to say what that means, and certainly to try to explain that to a non-Catholic universe.
Yeah.
What does it mean to embrace suffering? Why is that necessary?
And it sounds ludicrous, Mark. You know, you talk to the 60-something widow who's now alone. She doesn't have connections with her family. She just found a lump. And so she's alone and, you know, potentially has cancer, and she's miserable. And then you tell that person, well, embrace your suffering. I've seen visceral reactions to that sort of idea that we embrace, you know, something that is causing us existential pain.
Right, right. And it's the embracing of the cross, right? I mean, and you know, as Paul says, the cross is foolishness to the Greeks. It's foolishness to those that are philosophically bent from a, I would say, non-theological standpoint. But there's a part of me that says it's not foolishness. And I think that's where I think this show can kind of really jump in and try to tackle this. There's a part of that makes sense. When you start to peel back who humanity is, there's a part that says, no, suffering actually, and the necessity of suffering in life. And
Necessity. That's a bold claim. What do you mean?
Well, as we kind of started off with the no pain, no gain is sort of the throw off slogan there. I think that gets to it. As human beings, we are in a state of growth and becoming from the day we're born until the day we die.
Yeah.
For us to grow, for us to move from where we are to where we ought to be, whatever that ought to be is, that is going to involve a certain amount of necessary resistance, right? I mean, that's the nature of science around bodybuilding, right? You don't build muscle unless you're able to tear the fiber of the muscle.
Pick up heavy things, put it down. Don't let it kill you.
Right, right, exactly. But you do have to kind of harm your muscles for them to grow. And human life to a certain extent is that way. We only grow through the harms and travails that we cause yourself. Now, the question does that happen automatically? In other words, if you left somebody to their own devices, nobody wants to suffer. Nobody wants to embrace suffering. So if you left somebody to their own devices, would they actually grow just from the sufferings of life?
There's a lot more to it. And first of all, I fully agree that in our lives, the only way to move forward, the only way to grow, the only way to gain new talents, new skills, new ideas, is to, and here's the caveat, willingly move into suffering, to willingly submit to the pain. And of course, we'll be unpacking that and what that means and why we would do that. But fundamentally, it comes down to this. If you look at a moving river, if it's moving and the waters are continually being refreshed, you know, life abounds. You know, the fish will be there, the plant life will be there. But as soon as that water stops and it's a stagnant pool, there's nothing but decay. And that's exactly how our lives are. So we say we want to live in relative comfort, but that's an arbitrary term because it changes from person to person. But if we stop doing the becoming part, you know, when men we hit middle age, there's the midlife crisis, and that's because there's this idea, well, we've done the things to get us to where we are, and now there's stagnation. There's not enough hardship, and so I'm stuck.
Yeah, and part of that question, we've done multiple shows on identity, but part of that comes up of are we essentially those things that we do? In other words, is that, I mean, obviously that's a component of who we are, but is that solely who we are? And there's a part of me that wants to push back against this notion, and part of the reason why I want to say no, you know, when you start to peel it back, we can say suffering is to be embraced, and it is, but it's only to be embraced because of our own sinfulness and our own fall. In other words, we were never designed to suffer. And there's and I think that goes back to this idea that there's a core being to humanity that is not just simply action. It's not just simply becoming. There's a core to our being that is to a certain extent placid and static. That I, you know, happiness comes in some ways from finding that and embracing that rather than constantly moving towards that person whom we think we should become.
So I think there's this juxtaposition between the stability of our soul and the ever-changing portion of our physical body. And so I can see that there's some tension there. You know, our personalities, our soul, our mind, you know, that's the stable portion of who we are. And yet the world around us, our physical body, our experiences, our circumstances are constantly changing. And so there's this pulling between the stasis of our being and the changing of the world around us. You know, I can get on board with that as you know, potentially one source of our spiritual suffering. But you also have to add in the idea that we've got 150,000 years of evolution that that our mothers and fathers lived lives of hardship. We've become very, very good at dealing with suffering and moving past it and unlocking some great potential when we're pushed.
Right, right. There's an added danger here, and it's a danger involving technology that, you know, when you throw in this idea that suffering is to be avoided rather than embraced, which I think is kind of what we're pushing back against.
Yeah.
You have this danger of constantly looking for more and more and better technological solutions.
Until you get artificial intelligence.
To the problem of pain.
Yeah.
But the problem of pain is not one that can be solved by technology. It's one that really has to be reckoned with, I think, philosophically and spiritually.
The human condition cannot be garnered or developed solely within technology because we're more than just, you know, physical body.
All right. Well, we're coming up on a break, so we're going to take a quick break here on the Catholic Cave. But when we come back, we're going to keep talking about suffering. You're listening to the Catholic Cave on Catholic Radio Indy.
It might be the people.
It could be the programming.
But we think it's the God who made the people.
And inspired the programming.
He's the best reason we can think of to keep coming back.
Catholic Radio Indy.
For a long time, we've been telling you that if you have an Echo Dot or other smart speaker device, you can hear Catholic Radio Indy simply by saying, Alexa, play Catholic Radio Indy. Just the other day, I did that and Alexa was feeling a bit argumentative. I'll let you hear my conversation with her. Alexa, where are you?
Here I am. What do you want?
Alexa, play Catholic Radio Indy.
Now, just why would you want me to do that?
Well, because we've got great programming 24 hours a day.
Well, a lot of other radio stations have good programs, too.
Yeah, but our programming talks about God and eternal salvation.
I am very smart. I know almost everything about everything, but I do not know about God and salvation.
Well, that's why people need Catholic Radio Indy. So, Alexa, do me a favor. Whenever anyone says, Alexa, play Catholic Radio Indy, just send them our way, would you?
Yes, I will be happy to do that. In the meantime, I am going to do some research about that thing you called salvation. I wonder where I can find out more about that.
At Catholic Radio, we love to hear from you. Call us anytime. Just recently, we found this message on our voicemail.
I'm a non-Catholic that listens to your Catholic radio station, and I just wanted to thank you guys. I listen to Catholic Answers and Al Cresta sometimes, and I think her name's Teresa Tommy. I listen to her and another show or two. I appreciate it.
Call us at 317-870-8400 and let us know what you're thinking.
I just called to say, even though I'm not a Catholic, I listen to your station.
Welcome back to the Catholic Cave. I'm Mark Tuttle here with Joseph Tomasian, and we're talking about suffering today. You know, suffering seems unnatural to the human condition. It seems like something we should try to avoid or at least endure. You know, right. Good old British stiff upper lip and all that. But yet, there's something about suffering that we know is healthy for us. It's kind of like eating broccoli, right? You know that it's important.
I like broccoli.
I like broccoli
too.
That's a bad example. Broccoli is a bad example because I do like broccoli. Yeah. Lima beans. That's maybe better. I hate lima beans. So there's something about suffering that we know is necessary to the human condition. And, you know, from Catholic theology, we get the idea that we have been expelled from the Garden of Eden. You know, we live in a universe where we're going to have to toil and work for our food, you know, and that's part of the result of original sin. So there's a little bit, theologically, that kind of says, well, suffering is not natural to the human condition.
Yeah.
Right? Ultimately, we are destined to life in paradise where there will be no suffering. And so we look at suffering as part of the human condition. But yet, on the other hand, we also recognize that we can't be human without it.
You know, from a philosophical and theological perspective, I think some of the great thinkers of the past would say, you know, that's because we have a repugnance to suffering because we have this collective memory of our time in paradise when there wasn't suffering. And so, you know, it points to the time in which mankind had the capacity to not sin, however long that was from, you know, a theoretical theological positioning. But because there's the expelling from the garden, and now we have to work, you know, we have a resistance to that. We have a resistance to that suffering. And I was out west with a buddy of mine, a good priest of Arlington, Virginia, and we were gearing up to climb Mount Teton, and we got into a healthy conversation, as we generally do when we're together, about he made the comment, you know, the only way to achieve glory in one's life is to suffer first. And I had the biggest knee-jerk resistance to that. I thought that if you just achieve enough in your life, you know, you can float on your laurels. That's not what I said, but it was about as ridiculous as my rebut was. But as time went on and I considered that question, or considered his positioning that, you know, we climb the mountain because it's hard. You know, we get in shape because it's hard. Well, I have a pushback against that idea, because we don't do things just because they're hard. We do hard things because of where it takes us, because we're geared to challenge and to suffering and to hardship, because we know that on the other side, you know, there is that glory. There's the having a physically fit body. There's the experience of standing on the mountaintop, which is exhilarating. And so, you know, creating hardship in our lives in the United States, there's multi-billion dollar corporations built around this, you know, to give people the experience of going out west and riding horses and going hunting, looking for elk. Well, once upon a time, that was just people's every single day.
Right. And they had to do it, right?
Yeah.
It wasn't something you chose to do. You had to go hunt the elk, otherwise you didn't eat.
But the difference is, if you do so on your own accord, because you can always go back and sleep in your warm bed.
Right. And that almost makes it so it's not suffering, right? I think there's an element to suffering that
it's a hint of suffering,
right? Yeah, but I mean, if you have a warm bed waiting for you at the end of the day,
or at the end of the trip,
right? I won't call it masochism, but
there is a masochistic element to
it. Yeah, you're looking for the you're looking for the pain without it being true suffering, right? So you know, I think suffering is a much more permanent sort of condition, to where you recognize that you are never going to be able to find that comfort again, or you're going to have to struggle very hard to be able to find that comfort. It's not just going to be a warm bed waiting for you at the end of the day.
So you think that temporary suffering is different than an existential suffering?
I think there's an existential suffering that comes from our own imperfection, right?
So
and whether that's a physical imperfection.
What is existential suffering for our listeners?
So existential suffering is a suffering that has to do with you at your core as an individual, right? So number of ways to get at this idea, yeah. But it is suffering that has to do with the very fact that you're a human being.
So could we say somebody who suffers from depression and anxiety, they have this consistent and stable sort of underlying panic about their daily lives?
I guess no, but what I mean by existential suffering is more that this is a suffering that goes with the human condition. It goes with just simply being a human being. So it's not suffering that comes from depression. It's not suffering that comes from anxiety or psychological problems. It could be, but it's the suffering that comes from the state of us as human beings not being perfect.
So when I walk up the stairs and I hear my knees creak and my ankles pop on every single step, that's part of the existential suffering you're talking about.
Correct. And you know, it's kind of funny because people will say that animals can feel pain, mm-hmm. but they can't truly suffer.
They're not aware of their own suffering.
Right. And the reason why is probably part of it, in my opinion, is that they have no concept of perfection. They have no concept of what a perfect dog ought to be. Right. So they don't know enough to know that, okay, my knees creaking as I go up the stairs is not right. There's something wrong with that.
And it's a constant reminder of our impending doom, our mortality,
and a constant reminder that we're not there yet. I mean you can look at physical imperfections a couple of ways. So a physical imperfection could be an injury, it could be, you know, something wrong with your body, but it also could be that you're not strong enough, right? Mm. You know, your legs could ache going up the stairs because you're weak. That sounds very German, doesn't it?
Does. It does.
I'm picturing Hans and Franz from Saturday Night Live. But that condition of us not hitting who we think we ought to be, I think really that's what a lot of human suffering is rooted in.
Yeah.
And we try to mask that through technology. I think we try
and
to
alcohol,
cover
and pornography,
right.
we and
try,
drugs.
But the modern world tries to mask that. I think in previous ages that was the attempt was to endure it, but I don't know that either of those are quite the correct approach to take to it.
So what do you think is the correct approach?
Well, I mean, once again, Catholic theology, good old Catholic catechism says it's to be embraced. Now, what that means, I don't know.
So here's the thing. I don't want to embrace suffering because it's, quote unquote, the right thing to do. If I'm going to willingly embrace suffering, I better know that I'm doing so for a purpose, which is why, you know, I like to go to the gym. I like to lift weights, and I do so 4 days a week and sit in the sauna and run a couple days a week. And none of these things are comfortable. None of them. I hate sitting in a sauna, but I love it at the same time. I love it because when I get out, I'm not in the sauna and I feel great. But doing these activities, I know have a positive effect on not only the quantity of my life, but the quality of my life. You know, I know that by exercising, at the end of exercising, I'm going to feel better. My mind is going to be more relaxed. And you know, there's a chemical component of that, the release of dopamine and serotonin and all the good stuff, right? But that's not sort of the existential suffering that, you know, we have to convince others is a good thing to move towards.
You know, I don't think it's unrelated, though, because I think it is a attempt for you to move your physical person into a state that it's not right now, right? And that's why you are wanting to embrace the work of working out, or even the relaxation of going to a sauna, even though it's temporarily uncomfortable. You know, okay, this is in the end going to help me relax.
It is 180 degrees of pure hell for 20 minutes.
Right, right, exactly. But on the end of it, you know, you will be a more relaxed person.
Yeah.
And so because you know you will be, and that, I think that's the key, I will be in the future, you have this projection and this idea of who you ought to be. Yeah. And what state you ought to have. And so the suffering comes from this realization that I need to do things to move myself in the direction. I think that's a healthy suffering. I think that's
it's discipline of the will.
Right. That's not the same as suffering cancer.
No, not at all.
It's not the same as suffering a car accident,
right,
or something like that. So I think there's on the one hand, there's a healthy suffering that we need to embrace that the modern world tells us we shouldn't, right?
Yes.
I think the modern world is saying, yeah, okay, so you want to be relaxed, but we can come up with a magic pill, or we can come up with a technology, or we can come up with a better way rather than you having to endure a sauna,
yeah,
for you to be able to relax. So I think there's that component to it that we're constantly looking for how to grow and move and become who we know we ought to be. But at the same time, we're looking for the shortcuts and we're looking for the technological ways to keep us from doing it. And it really does separate us from, I think, third world countries. We in the first world countries,
yeah,
to a certain extent, have to create our own problems and suffering, where somebody in the third world, it's kind of baked into everyday life.
Yeah,
they know that. I mean, they intrinsically know. Look, I'm barely have enough food. I barely have shelter. That's suffering enough. I mean, they know they need to get from point A to point B, and that is their life, is simply to find food and shelter. For us, I think we've got the luxury to a great extent of being able to look beyond that and become I guess a greater vision of ourselves to a certain extent. That's what the first world does for us. But we're coming up again on a break. So as we come back, we'll talk a little bit more about suffering here on The Catholic Cave.
You're listening to Catholic Radio Indy, converting the culture to Christ through radio, featuring 100% Catholic programming 24/7. Do your friends a favor. Tell them about Catholic Radio Indy.
The first radio station signed on back in the 1930s. And wow, people could get news without having to wait for the next day's newspaper and hear great entertainment right in their living rooms. But then in the late 40s, television came along. And since it could add visual content, well, that would probably kill off radio. But it didn't. In the 70s, satellite radio, 8-track tapes and cassettes, and the Walkman came along. Surely one of these would kill off radio. But they didn't. Now there's streaming on computers, podcasts, Alexa, and smartphones that put the world at your fingertips. And you know what? Radio is still here. In fact, a recent survey of people aged 18 and up showed that on a monthly basis, radio reached more people than television, including time-shifted TV. And for audio programming, more people than smartphones, PC, Alexa, or tablets. When you support Catholic Radio Indy, you're supporting a powerful tool that has the potential to reach over 1 million people every day with the message of salvation. If you're one of our donors, thank you very much. If you haven't joined our family of donors yet, today would be a good day to do that. Just go to CatholicRadioIndy.org and click on the donate button. That's CatholicRadioIndy.org. And thank you for your support.
When you're tired of doing life alone, come back here. We enjoy the company. We hope you do too. Better together. Catholic Radio Indy.
Welcome back to The Catholic Cave. I'm Mark Tuttle here with Joseph Tomasian, and we hope you are enjoying the show and not suffering too much, because we are talking about suffering, and it's part of the human condition. We all know that intrinsically, and yet we avoid it. We try to get around it. In a lot of ways, our entire life is spent trying to deal with, in some form, the fact of suffering.
Yeah. Last segment, we were discussing the kinds of suffering, either that you exercise because you know it's good for you, or you endure suffering because it's been imposed on you. So I think we have to differentiate two very distinctive kinds of suffering, intrinsic and extrinsic. Intrinsic are the things that you voluntarily do for hardship, you know, like exercise or hiking or mountain, you know, those kinds of activities. But an extrinsic suffering would be that which is imposed upon your circumstance. It could be cancer, it could be poverty, it could be, you know, a divorce or a loss of a job, things like that. And so it's much easier to look at an intrinsic type suffering such as exercise and say, I know that this is good for me, but when I'm faced with an extrinsic type of suffering, it's really hard for anybody to look at that and say, to willingly accept that suffering that's being presented to me, and not just thinking, but knowing that a good is going to come from it. And so the question that some people might have is, well, if there is an intrinsic suffering, how in the world is that going to help my understanding of an extrinsic? And the answer, short answer is, when you voluntarily do hard things, when you voluntarily don't put salt on your food, well, or stay away from sugars, what you're doing is you're building a resistance to suffering. And you little by little add suffering into your life until you can get to a point where when an actual traumatic example happens, because it's going to happen, you or somebody around you is going to die. There's going to be a trauma in your life at some point, you know, statistically. And so the more capable we are of sort of developing that plasticity to the bruntness of trauma in life, the more equipped we are going to be to deal with that suffering when it does come from an extrinsic source.
Right. And, you know, we've got all sorts of societal cliches and things around extrinsic suffering that show that we kind of recognize that there's there can be a healthy component to it, right? I mean, the whatever doesn't kill you makes you stronger, right?
Yeah.
You know,
whatever that means,
right? You know, somebody, you know, we'll often say somebody that went through a huge trauma, they came out of it better, right? They came out of it in a better situation. So we've got all these, like I said, societal cliches that kind of indicate it, but how that works. First off, does it always work that way? I think that's a great question. Do these extrinsic sufferings that we face, do they always have meaning to them? Are they always for our benefit? Or is sometimes suffering just simply meaningless?
Yeah.
And so I think that's a really important question to ask. And if it does make us better, how does that work? Because this isn't suffering that we've brought on ourselves. It's not suffering that we're taking on, like going to a gym and working out, or yeah, climbing a mountain or something like that, where we know we're becoming somebody better than we already are.
Yeah.
This is being imposed on us. This is being forced on us. And does it actually make us better or not?
It's ludicrous. It's scandalous to meet parents, mom and dad, who lost a child, and then to tell them that this trauma is somehow going to make them better.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. You can't. Yeah.
That seems absolutely meaningless from a suffering perspective.
Yeah.
And so we don't fully understand extrinsic suffering.
No, but I think the root causes of that extrinsic suffering, though, and the intrinsic suffering that we embrace and willing, I think they come from that same source of imperfection in the universe, right?
Yeah.
The universe is not a perfect place, and we recognize this and know this. And so death exists.
Yeah.
Disease exists, natural disasters exist, wars. These things exist because the universe has fallen, right?
Yeah,
the universe is not perfect. And we recognize that. As human beings, we know the universe is not right.
Right.
And we know this deep down. And that's, I think, where a lot of the extrinsic suffering comes from. You know, if we thought the universe was perfect, and let's say the universe is perfect.
Mathematically,
perhaps. These same types of things could happen and they would not cause suffering because we would understand.
Yeah.
We'd have everything would have meaning because we would know, okay, the universe is perfect. It's the way it ought to be. And these things are happening. And so therefore there's meaning to the suffering and therefore it's all right. So, I mean, Viktor Frankl, really sort of keyed in on this idea of meaningfulness behind suffering, and that if you have meaning, if you have meaning in life, suffering can be endured, it can be embraced, it can be, and you know, Viktor Frankl was a concentration camp survivor. He lived in a concentration camp, and he noticed, okay, there were some people that were able to endure this and live through it and come out of it, and there were others that succumbed very quickly to the conditions in the concentration camp. And he said that the difference was those people that had a sense of meaning to their lives were the ones that were able to. And he said a lot of the tortures and torments that were thrown at them were there to destroy their sense of meaning.
Oh, sure.
Yeah. And so that was part of the psychological punishment that was dealt out. I mean, they were told to move a pile of dirt from one area to the next and then to move it back.
Because it had for absolutely no purpose at
all. Exactly. Just to show that your work has no meaning. There's no purpose behind. You're not serving anybody by working. We're just making you work.
In a sense, much of our modern military training, you know, for the young bucks going into basic training, it's part of that is to tear down their sense of self, to get rid of their agency and create more of a corporate or communal thought process. You know, you are part of a team. You are not an individual.
It's to reprogram their that picture that we all have. Yeah. I think being human, we have this picture of who we ought to be. And so, yeah, you're right. Military training is there to sort of reprogram that to a certain extent. So no longer are you becoming who you think you ought to be, but now you're going to become who we think you ought to be.
We need you to be a soldier, not somebody who thinks on their own, because you're going to die and, you know, potentially kill other people if you're not part of that group.
Right. And not only that, we're also going to put you in circumstances where you're going to have to do incredibly hard things. And to be able to do those incredibly hard things, you need to think that you are a person capable of doing these. I mean, there's a positive side to military training, not just negative.
Oh, sure. Yeah. But so when it comes down to it, we were talking about extrinsic forces of suffering, and how, you know, trying to make sense of that suffering, which I think is going to be the most crucial part of the conversation. You're absolutely right. It's recognizing perhaps that the event itself, we'll use, you know, the senseless shootings that happen all the time, where somebody dies and you know, families are left thinking, how do I make sense of this? Why did this happen? And I don't think saying, well, you know, good is going to come from this is the right answer, or you know, embrace your suffering. I think that's going to have a negative effect. But it's more than anything, it's helping these people recognize that meaning still happens, meaning still exists for their own lives as they move forward and try to deal with their grief. So it's not simply that they're, if you're able to find meaning in those kinds of suffering, you do grow. You do become a different person. You bring the baggage of the past, to be sure, but it's the only way to move forward and grow to a different person. So it's in that suffering. Now, whether that is a good or an evil, that's a different conversation.
Right. And it does bring up a question of control too, that, you know, we have this picture of who we want to become. We have this understanding of the type of person we ought to be. And we have a, you know, basic understanding of the things we need to do to become that, right? So I want to be a strong person. I know I need to go work out, etc. But circumstances happen that thwart us from being able to become who we think we ought to be and impose on us another vision of who we actually are becoming. Mm-hmm. And I think that's part of the That's part of the meaninglessness to extrinsic suffering.
Right.
Is now something has happened that has completely devastated my image of who I am, where I'm going, what I'm supposed to be, and it's put this insurmountable block in my way of me becoming who I've always thought I should be. Yeah. And I guess trying to restore that sense of, okay, that yeah. once upon a time was my life. That once upon a time was who I thought I was becoming. Now that's completely changed. And I'm completely a different person now because of this tragedy. And now I have to sort of reimagine to a certain extent who I'm becoming.
You know, and I think a lot of that is tied to a word that you just used. And I think this is where, if we are able to change our mindset, who I should be, you know, we attach our persons, ourself, our lives to this idea of should isn't right now. Should is not in the past. Should be is this idea that you created of where you want to go in the future. It's not what you're guaranteed. And so if you release this idea of should and embrace the now, that step right there is really the right step to moving towards better health.
And yet a lot of that who we think we should be is outside of our control. A lot of that is created by external forces around us. So we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll talk a little bit more about suffering, but we'll also talk about this. Where does this idea of who we should be actually come from?
Right.
You're listening to The Catholic Cave here on Catholic Radio Indy.
We've found the source.
Just turn it on and it just turns my day around.
His name is Jesus.
He's really changed my life and changed me for the better.
Your search is over. Catholic Radio Indy.
Do you sometimes think that nobody prays for you? Does it seem like your concerns and worries aren't shared by anybody else? If so, then put that away. We here at Catholic Radio Indy pray for you, our listeners, every single day. If you have a special prayer request, go to www.catholicradioindy.org and let us know. We lift up our listeners' prayers each morning. It's how we start our workday. Let us pray for you, and may God bless you abundantly.
Have you ever thought about joining the Catholic Church? Have you just wanted to explore the Catholic faith? All you need to do is call your local Catholic Church for more information. We are always happy to help you in your journey to discover and learn more about the Catholic faith. We have classes that are almost year-round, and the classes and information sessions do not involve making a commitment, and there is no pressure to join. Please call your local Catholic parish for more information today and start the journey of one day possibly becoming Catholic as well. God bless.
Welcome back to The Catholic Cave. I'm Mark Tuttle here with Joseph Tomasian, and we're doing a show on suffering. We're talking about that state of being human that we all think should not be a state of being human, suffering, whether it's suffering we bring upon ourselves because we know we need to grow, or whether it's suffering that's imposed on us from outside forces that, if all goes well, should make us grow, might make us grow. But we also know sometimes suffering just happens for suffering's sake. So this is a topic you've probably thought about a lot, correct,
Joseph? I think about it quite often. Yeah. How, especially, you know, moving towards middle age and thinking about, you know, reaching the plateau in my life and where I'm going next. And, you know, I've accomplished the things. And so what do I do now? You know, I find myself in this period where I'm no longer resume building, but eulogy building. And how do I want to pass on my legacy to the next generation and the generations to come? To how do I want to mentor those around me, you know, my students or whatnot? How do I want to give back in this twilight of my life, as it were, and still have significant meaning to it, where I'm not stuck and say, well, I've did the thing. I guess I'm going to rest on my laurels and just slide into death.
Right, right. And your experience, though, goes beyond just yourself. I mean, you've got some academic background yeah. here in the realm of mental health.
Yeah, you know, so I think for those who listen regularly, thank you, all three of you, of who we are and what we do. Sometimes, you know, the questions can come in, what are these guys' credentials? I was in seminary for 7 years, and I studied. I have degrees in classics in philosophy and systematic theology and master's degree in systematic theology, my doctorate's in theology. And I've also studied master's level clinical mental health at Marion University here in Indianapolis. And so I have all of this academic background specific to the human condition from both a philosophical and theological perspective, but as well as from a psychological perspective. And so it just sort of helps to give a more well-rounded idea of who we are as broken people. I've spent a lot of time in the classroom teaching master's and doctoral level students on the human condition from a philosophical, theological, and psychological bend.
Right. So before the break, we were talking about this idea of who I should be, right? And yeah. and where that picture of who I should be, that I'm not there, comes from. And, I think a lot of it is based on models that are given to us from outside ourselves. So, we think that we have a certain amount of control over this picture of who we should become. But I think there's a great deal of it that is given to us, particularly in the modern age, through advertising, through our environment growing up, through this. And these are models that are given to us that we latch onto. And so we have these sort of metaphysical models that we want to become. And then we have a world of other people that are in some ways in our way from becoming that.
Sure.
And so I think this who we should be is this mixture of this picture that's given to us and also the influences that kind of are steering us and keeping us from becoming who we think we should be, that's constantly sort of changing to a certain extent the direction that we're headed. But it's not it's not within our psychic control to a great extent to form who we should become.
Yeah, the should, I think, is where we get into trouble. It's control, as you said. We have this idea that we are in absolute control of our destinies, and if we just do the thing, then the other thing should happen. Well, there's that should again. We end up shoulding ourselves, until we're just stuck and can't make sense of anything.
Right. And I think you add to that that, there are forces and people that are in our way or have
malintent.
Malintent or have acquired the things that we want. You go back to almost the infantile stage of, well, wait a second, if he has the toy, I can't have the toy.
Right.
And so, that sort of ingrown envy within humanity. That itself, I think, is a source of a lot of suffering. And once again, I'm not sure, as Catholics, we say we should be becoming saints. We should be purging ourselves of these sins. But I think there's a certain amount of envy and thing that is so intrinsic to the human condition that, outside of complete saintly sanctity, you're not going to get rid of it.
No, you offer it up, as it were. But
right.
I have such a problem with that. It seems like such a dismissive phrase. You're going through a tough spot, a tough season in your life, and a well-meaning parent or a friend, just offer it up. Well, what in the world does that mean, even?
Yeah, the offering it up, and I can give you the textbook catechism, explanation of what that means. You're attaching your suffering to the suffering that Jesus endured on the cross.
Most people, that has no meaning.
No, that has no meaning. No, because as I said, suffering, this whole show is on trying to find and understand the meaning behind suffering.
And why we should embrace it.
Right. And, the fact that we're talking about this on the Catholic Cave, I think, is eye-opening, because I'm not sure that people would approach suffering from any other standpoint other than it is to be avoided.
Right.
Unless you are religious, unless you have a deep abiding belief in God. So there's a certain religious aspect to this question of
If God is good, why does he allow suffering?
Right. If God is good, why does he allow suffering? The atheist uses that to basically say, well, they're suffering, so therefore there must be no God.
Or the God that you think is all good is not.
Right. Exactly. That's true. I mean, I think a lot of atheism comes from a standpoint of almost agnosticism around the existence of God, but but if God exists, he's either completely indifferent or he's malevolent.
Right.
Yeah.
And the truth is that the second person of the Trinity, Jesus Christ, God made man, when he was presented with his suffering, when he knew it was coming, you know, his first instinct was, Lord, let this cup pass from me. But not my will, yours,
right?
And so he gave up his will in that, and then moved in submission and embraced his cross. These are all words that we use, and so to willingly move into suffering and death, the actions of the God-man Jesus Christ sanctified those actions. It sanctified the act of suffering. It elevated it. And now what we have is this redemptive quality to suffering. If I embrace my extrinsic suffering and unite it to the sufferings of Jesus, I know that there's going to be a redemptive quality to it because he made the act of suffering holy.
Right. And it's not just an arbitrary meaning that's added to suffering. You know, it's not just sort of a, well, you know, some good will come out of this, but it's a recognition that through Christ's suffering on the cross, the universe is made whole again in some way. The universe is redeemed through this. And so our suffering itself can be redeemed through the same process of willingly submitting to the will of the Father and really trying to make that will our will. And that's not easy by any stretch. I mean, that's
no, convincing somebody who is suffering or dying of cancer that ultimately their suffering is going to have a positive redemptive quality to them. It sounds ludicrous.
Right.
And then trying to convince them of otherwise is sometimes an uphill battle. However, on the other hand, it also gives meaning to their suffering.
Right. And in a world that is urging us to avoid suffering at all cost, to do the things to take away all suffering, to recognize the power of redemptive suffering, the ability of this suffering to be used beneficially, not just for yourself, but for others. It's a powerful message, but it's a very countercultural message. It's not a message that the world outside of the Catholic Church is going to readily understand and embrace.
Yeah, there's a priest of the Archdiocese, Father John Hollowell, who in 2018 was diagnosed with a brain tumor. And he just revealed on his YouTube page that he was healed at Lourdes. But, you know, miracles of healing are not that uncommon. But what he did was he offered up his suffering for the clergy sex abuse scandals. And so by offering that up, you know, he gave meaning to that particular suffering. And I think it's a beautiful testimony of how living your life for others has a redemptive quality, regardless of, you know, the healing is a gift for him and a reminder for us. But he was willingly moving towards his own death. And he was going to say, Lord, I'm doing this to heal our church.
And that embracing of the suffering that comes from God, that's not part of our own choosing. This is not something for us to become who we think we should be. That type of suffering, when we willingly embrace it like that, it does begin to change our image of who we should become. Because as we're offering that suffering up, you know, for Christ's purposes on the cross, saying, you know, Lord, just use this suffering for this or that cause, we're changing our image of that should that's in our mind to the image of Jesus on the cross.
Let your will be done, Lord, and not mine.
We're beginning to embrace more and more the image of ourselves as Christ, and less this image that we're given so often from the world, from our lives, from our experiences. We're allowing our own image of ourselves to be sanctified in and through our sufferings.
And that is all the time we have for the Catholic Cave for this week. For Mark Tuttle, for Joseph Tomasi, and I'm Kent Blanford, just reminding you, offer it up and be holy.
The Catholic Cave is a production of Catholic Radio Indy. Replays of this program are available in podcast form at catholicradioindy.org. Comments about this program can be addressed to kent@catholicradioindy.org or by calling 317-870-8400. Did you miss something in this show or just want to hear it again? Podcasts of this and all our other great local programs are available 24/7 at catholicradioindy.org.